Muddy Knees Media.
Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule WSL edition with Football Manager. It's Lindsay Hooper here and back alongside me, finally.
What do you mean, finally? It's me, Kate Borsay. Hello.
Did you have a lovely time?
Oh, my goodness. I'm sunned. I'm relaxed. I feel that I've had my mental and physical break away from the game. On the agenda on today's show, a record crowd at Nottingham Forest City Ground sees a thriller as Chelsea become Continental Cup champions for the first time in their history.
England gear up to begin their She Believes title defence against World Cup semi-finalists and foes, the United States.
And we round up some of the big talking points of the week in women's football. That will include transfer news, injury updates and our old favourite weather-related schedule changes. Woohoo!
We've already mentioned the weather twice, Dubai and now that again. Well, joining us on today's show, a big hello to broadcaster presenter as well for the likes of Five Live, TalkSport and Sky Sports News, also celebrating a birthday on a leap year, yes. Anne-Marie Batson.
Yes, and I'm not going to tell you my proper age or my leap year age.
So I want the leap year age.
Well, I think you must be 7 or 8.
A little bit higher.
A little bit higher.
Because if I tell people my leap year age, they'll work out what my real age is, so I keep stum.
You can't possibly be older than me at 41. I mean, I don't think anyone is in the
All I'm bothered about is how many candles could fit on the cake that you've brought in, i.e. is it big enough for me to have a massive slice?
I can assure you that will be the case, yes. You'll be able to have a massive slice.
Chocolate ganache cake.
I know. Anne-Marie has come armed with cake, so she'll be welcomed for many hours after the show.
Not many hours. I want to rattle through this. Back to the cake.
Can I just say, it's the first time I've shared a studio with you, Missy. I haven't seen you in such a long time. Kate and I obviously worked together over the last few weeks, so it's great to see Kate again, but it's fantastic to see you, Miss Hooper.
And also twice in a week.
I know.
We were at the SJAs.
Yes, we were. Had a quick chat, gossip, and then, had a drink.
Went to your thing. Just standing up, presenting an award. Congratulations, by the way, to everyone who won at the SJAs. Looked like a really good night. I was coming back from my glitzy holidays.
I saw the pictures. Yeah, enough said.
Just thought I'd run it in again.
Yeah. Back to your birthday.
Yes, back to your birthday. And can I just get a little bit of insight? What's it like being born on a leap year? Is it extra special or is it just kind of annoying?
In my younger years, it was a little bit annoying because I couldn't understand why I couldn't have a birthday every year like everybody else. I mean, it's not, it was my fault that I was born on the 29th.
You did have a birthday every year though, didn't you?
Yes,
was it like literally, no.
Well, yeah,
actually, 29th only.
Well, I did. But the thing is, it was a case of when do I celebrate my birthday? Because there was a big argument in my family about should I have it on the 28th of February or should I have it on the 1st of March?
I've got a very strong opinion about this. I don't know
why. A lot of people have a strong opinion. I just go with the flow. What's your opinion on it?
It has to be the 1st because you wouldn't have been here on the 28th.
And yet I was born in the month of February. And that's the arc. So I have it on the 28th. But people send cards to me when it's not on a leap year. They'll send cards on both days because...
Also, if they're a day late, it's sort of fine.
It's all fine. So I give them that, you know, that out, if you like, if they forget. But 29th, it's fantastic. I had a big party a few years ago because it was a big number of 4 years ago, shall we say. But this year, I kept it very quiet. I was just really, really relaxed. But I'll tell you what causes me the most problems is when I have to input my birth date into computers and things like that. Back in the day, it wouldn't recognise the 29th, but now it does.
Yeah.
Like HMRC, shall we say. It wouldn't recognise it 10 years ago. Now it does. So that always used to cause me problems.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, listen, we know you've been right across the Conti Cup final and what a dramatic game it was as well. And arguably, the team that walked off with the trophy, their first ever Conti Cup trophy, Chelsea, weren't the best team on the day, were they?
Emma Hayes said that the best team didn't win, but the most resilient team won. And I think that sums it up in a nutshell. I was on a podcast, love you guys, of course, but I was on another podcast during the week. I said it was going to be 2-1 to Chelsea and I got it spot on because I think Chelsea just had the momentum. I wasn't surprised actually that Chelsea won it. I've seen them a few times this season and they are a force to be reckoned with. I can't see, apart from City, I can't see any team managing to dismantle Chelsea in the way that they can be dismantled. They are too strong this season.
We're going to dissect your thoughts further on that match. We'll also get some expert opinion over the phone as well. But first, whilst you were on other podcasts, and not on this one, something happened. We got a sponsor. Football Manager are now on board with the Offside Rule. And it is very good news this week because it marks the start of a Flash FM20 sale. This is if you play the game on PC or Mac.
That's right. A whole 30,000. 3% off. So in other words, a third. Well, more details are available at footballmanager.com. Sale starts this week but ends next Monday, the 9th of March. So don't hang around. Lindsay and I getting to grips with enjoying this Football Manager game. And just out of interest, because we like to canvas our guests, if you were going to manage any women's team, because this is where we'd like it to go next, right? If you're going to manage any women's team, which one would it be, Anne-Marie?
Surely everyone's going to say Chelsea right now, aren't they?
No, because she's an Arsenal fan, so she may well not.
I was actually going to say Arsenal. Yeah, spot okay. on, Kate. Okay. Yeah, Arsenal, I'd have to go with Arsenal, 100%.
As a neutral?
I'd say Lyon.
Oh, okay. Yeah. The glory.
The glory.
The glory.
Absolutely, 100%. I'm not ashamed to say it, the glory.
Okay. I would go for Liverpool because I feel like there's a lot that I could do.
There's a lot you could do.
Such a presumptive thing to say, isn't it?
Brilliant.
But this is how games like Football Managers work. They are full of fans.
Vicky Jepson's
saying,
listening in thinking, I know where the answer
myself.
Is. It was Kate.
I'm so sorry, Vicky. No disrespect. But I would be curious to see how it would be like to manage Liverpool.
Okay, well, let's get you straight back to the City Ground because we want to talk about this match in depth and the small matter of that Continental Cup final.
Back it goes to Anderson again, and Mielder's at the back post, and it was knocked down towards Beth England, who's made it 1-0 to Chelsea. Williamson got ahead to it, and Williamson's there again, and finally they've done it. Kirsten well here, gets back to her feet. England's and marked at the back post. She's waiting for it. She's got it! England's won it for Chelsea! You tell me to stop, but I keep on going. The Continental Cup is Chelsea's. Hayes history makers. England the hero. Winners of this competition for the first time. A trophy that's always eluded them. But not anymore. Now you should
know. The most resilient team won, not the better team, the most resilient one. And I'm very proud of the players and the effort they put in because it was a tough game.
Amazing. Oh my God. Definitely wasn't going to extra time there. We could not do that. I couldn't stand out in the cold for one more minute.
Bethany England popping up again with a wonderful winner. No, I'm so proud of them.
Once they scored, I was like, nah, there's no way. We've got some extra time in there. There was a few injuries and my gloves are wet, my socks are wet. I just need to get inside and celebrate.
That was quite emotional. Like, it was up and downs, and I think we deserved it, I think, because we gave everything we had. Like, we blocked, we put everything what we got in this Continental Cup final, and now we have to go and smash the league.
There's no secret, I came here to win trophies, and tonight's one of those nights.
The starting point is the treble, and there's my son in the crowd, which is what it's all about, winning so that he has something to be proud of.
Emma Hayes' side win the first domestic silverware of the season, and there could be more to come for her side.
Well, you heard the thoughts there of Emma Hayes, Sam Kerr and goalkeeping hero Ann-Kathrin Berger there. And the thing that you hear from Emma Hayes is the word proud about two or three times she says it. Clearly a competition she now loves.
Indeed, given that she was quite vocal about it a few months ago.
She sounds delighted with that.
I can just hear the sound of some backpedalling in the distance. Anyone?
That's what happens when you get silverware.
Indeed, exactly. And that's the point. I don't know any manager who would reject the idea of winning silverware outright. I get the point she was making a few months ago, but it's a trophy is a trophy. And it starts them off on this path of potentially winning the treble for the season. That's something to celebrate, why not? And the team have worked really, really hard for this. So good for her. I love the whole Brian Clough thing. I love the whole fact that she's a massive fan and she was getting quotes on the morning. But that team, I tell you, is something else. There's something special about that team. There's something special about Beth England. Ann-Kathrin Berger had a fantastic match. Millie Bright really stepped up. That whole team is just a delight to watch. And as I've mentioned, I've seen Chelsea a few times live now, and I'm in awe of them, of what they can do and what they achieve. The fact that they come out of the blocks and then they slow down the game, then they go fast again, then they slow down. They suffocate people in the midfield. And then that link up between Sam Kerr and Bethany England, you know, who thought that was going to happen straight away? But
so
it has.
Quickly. We've talked about that before on this podcast, about Chelsea, you know, initiating waves of play. And that's really interesting. And what a great advert for the women's game. I know it's kind of an oft thing said, but for the neutral, this game was tantalising, wasn't it? Obviously, Chelsea 1-0 up coming into the second half. And it was kind of even Stevens for me on both sides. It was Beth England, of course, with the early goal on around 8 minutes. And coming into the second half, it was sort of anyone's game. And then you saw Arsenal in that second half with Miedemar missing three clear chances, so unlike her. And you started to see Arsenal come into the game. And Caitlin Ford as well, Linz, I thought she was exceptional. So it's only her second game in English football.
Another Aussie that's shining, and one that I think a lot of people were interested to see how quickly she adapted. Well, the answer is, with a lot of the Australian imports that we've had, is that they've gone straight into WSL and taken off.
Yeah, absolutely. Which, as Kate mentioned, is such a good advert for the WSL. Hopefully you're going to attract more Australian players coming into it. And I think players really needed to help out Joe Monteiro, because purely because of the injury situation. And I'm not using that as an excuse, but if there's an injury situation that presents an opportunity for other players to shine, Saturday was it, and Caitlin Ford did exactly that.
Yeah, he was without key players, wasn't he, in the game? The likes of Kim Little, she was out, Leah Volte, Jem Beattie, also Hannah, who I know you spoke to last week as well, Lindsay. Just after the game, Joe Montemurro was responding to the suggestion that his team could have been more direct, in other words, to divert from his usual set style in order to make the most of what was happening in that game. And he just said, I'm hearing that I'm very, very stubborn, and I am, because I will never play a transition game. I'm really sorry. It's not my style. It's not my way. I believe in having the ball. I'm going to keep playing football. We have the players to play good football. I won't go away from my style. So in other words, he's going to keep the attractive football up, even if it costs them trophies. Is that a wise thing to do?
I think if you, on reflection, look at the match and think there was a different approach taken, and maybe they had have tried feeding a long ball, trying to get upfield, trying to turn around the play in midfield quicker, would that have had an effect where they came out of this game with the trophy? I still don't think that the answer is yes. I still think that Chelsea would have won that match. And I think there were parts of the possession play that they did dominate. And that's something that Arsenal can take away. I mean, Arsenal seemed to me to be that step up from Barcelona in women's football. You know, Barcelona have been playing now for some time this impressive possession-based football. And we know that Arsenal have the quality on the end of it. It just wasn't the day for... I mean, Miedemar's going to have her times when she sinks five or six chances like that. It just wasn't her day. And I don't think if they'd have played another 90 minutes and done a whole other tactic with it, that it would have changed. I think Chelsea were going to win that match.
And I think the last time Montemurro made a big change was when they played Chelsea last time, and looked how that worked out. He tried a different method and it didn't work. I do like to think, though, that there is a plan B in the back of his mind. If things aren't going to plan, can he make one or two tiny tweaks somewhere, just maybe change formation or swap out a player here and there? Because I think sometimes if plan A isn't working and you're getting pulverised, as we've seen in the past, I do think you might have to make a little bit of a change.
Let's talk about just some standout performances. We've mentioned Caitlin Ford and how impressive she was going forward. I've got to mention the Chelsea goalkeeper, Ann-Kathrine Berger. You touched on it earlier, Anne-Marie. A string of good saves, arguably. Well, you've got Beth England in the mix, of course, as well. But, you know, debatable who was the player of the match, really, between Ann-Kathrine Berger and Beth England. She threw herself around, didn't she? She was winded at one point from making a save before Leah Williamson got her goal.
She'd done something very similar the week before as well in the league. So this isn't
a
one-off.
Against Manchester City. I think it was Georgia Stanway, wasn't it, the week before? And it's great to see, you know, Chelsea, well, in fact, both sides have this rich history with having awesome goalkeepers, whether it's Van Veenendaal for Arsenal last season. They've obviously got Berger this season. And Ann-Kathrine Berger looks to be an absolutely essential part of that Chelsea side now.
Very much so. And I think if you've got a very good, strong goalkeeper, then you're going to have a good, strong defence, because obviously those two in that way need to work together and rely on each other. And because the way that she can spread her body out when she's going for a dive or something like that, I mean, I couldn't do it. I think she's a fantastic goalkeeper. I know she's had ups and downs, but again, the weekend was the day to show everyone what she could do, and she did that.
I mean, there's an incredible backstory there as well. She obviously featured for Birmingham for quite a while, was diagnosed with thyroid cancer back between the sticks, 61 days after a major operation. I mean, that tells you the grit and determination and how, you know, players with these amazing stories keep coming into our lives through women's football. You know, that's an amazing thing. OK, anyone else? I mean, I thought Chelsea's back line in general, Magdalena Eriksson, Jonna Andersson, Maren Mjelde playing out of position, very good as well.
I thought Maren Mjelde coped admirably with that, because I think she was the one player that was under the cosh a little bit in that role and had to adapt quickly. But I thought she was brilliant.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And again, it doesn't moan about it, gets on with the job. And what I like about Emma Hayes is everybody knows exactly what they're supposed to be doing. Mm. She's not that type of manager that will stand at the touchline and shouting at people. And Maren did the job that she was told to do. And yeah, she was a little bit under the cosh, but she held it.
Mm. I'd also like to say, when we were talking earlier about Montemurro and whether he could have changed things up and whether there was going to be a different way of winning that game for him, I think we're also not paying enough credit to Chelsea in this, in the sense that I think they let them have the ball a lot. I don't think it was something that was happening by chance. I think that they were dominating. They knew positionally, it felt a little bit zonal at times from Emma, that she'd given these areas that they've got to look after, and they kept it as they wanted. I don't think that they ever looked like they were going to go away without winning that one. I just felt that they were superior on the day.
I think some lessons would have been learned after the match against Man City when it ended as a 3-3 draw, because that was the only time I think Chelsea were pushed and they had their backs against the wall, and there were certain players that became vulnerable under City's attack. And I think Emma would not want to repeat that because Arsenal got such good strong forwards. So you're right, those zonal marking. I do like zonal marking. I know not everyone's the biggest fan of it, but I like the fact that people got areas that they look after. Yeah. And I think that worked really well on Saturday.
How much are we looking forward to Beth England at the She Believes? And we'll talk more about the She Believes later in the show. But just, she's in such rich form at the moment, Lindsay.
Yeah, and I hope that that isn't a purple patch. I hope that that is going to be what we see from Beth England season in, season out now. She has shown that she has got every way of finishing, left, right, head. She's just brilliant. She's got a lovely curled effort as well. Her awareness of where the goal is, she doesn't even look anymore. She just knows where it is. That is a player high on confidence. And when someone's like that, they're on the way to something special. I think she'll go on to be the leading goal scorer. I know it's going to be hard with Miedema having scored so many goals and that potential to do so just in one match. So I don't think it's going to be clear cut. But I think she will get top goal scorer for this season, and it will be thoroughly deserved. It's one of those with Beth that I think she's also been quite fortunate with the players that she's playing around and with at the moment. I think, as you touched on earlier, Sam Kerr, that relationship that they've suddenly picked up from her arrival. But before that, I thought she was linking up with Fran as well, before Fran went out of the side. I don't know, there's a bit about her that's got something to prove, and she's proving it.
Yeah, very much so.
I think she has something to prove for England. I think I agree what you say, Lindsay, about her, the players around her. What I haven't figured out yet is how she works for England in terms of what is her relationship going to be like with those players around her? We haven't seen that yet. And is it, as you say, is it going to be a case of her being able to slot in and do what she does naturally? Mm. Or is it a case she's going to have to figure out whose partnerships work for her and who don't?
Also, who is going to play where? Because she's going to benefit, isn't she, from the fact that there's no Beth Mead as well in that team. So an exciting prospect. We'll talk more about that.
I don't think she is going to benefit from working with Ellen White. I can't see that them being too, they're too similar, aren't they?
It does present a very interesting conundrum, doesn't it?
Exactly.
It does,
which I'm excited to see how Phil Neville solves.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Ellen is the one out of the two of them that has played in a different position before. She's so much more successful when she plays straight down the middle, but for Birmingham, for other teams, she's been more of the support striker for most of her career. She's never been that out and out striker until recent seasons, until she had that sensational form at the World Cup and came back, and now she's managed to keep hold of that role, and that's where I think she should play. But if you were looking at both of them, which one's played out of position more? Ellen.
Well, let's get a first-hand account of this Conti Cup final then from a man who was at the City Ground. It's women's football journalist. And of course, he looks after the media for Sheffield United women as well. It's Rich Laverty. Hello, our favourite Rich.
Yes, and former Offside Rule website editor.
Former, well, I would even go so far as to say an aficionado and one of the founding members of our team.
There you go. Are you happy with that intro, Rich?
It's the longest intro I've ever had. I quite like it.
By the way, are you on a mountain? Where are you?
I'm not on a mountain, but it's just permanently windy up north at the minute, so...
Are you in the middle of the moors?
No, I'm at work.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Okay. Let's start then with the atmosphere at the City Ground. Have you been there before to see women's football? What did you think of it?
I've never been before, actually. I've been round the corner to the County Ground. Obviously, Notts County used to play there, and England had a few games there, but it was good. It was very... It felt like there was a lot more Chelsea fans there than Arsenal fans. I don't know whether that was just because it felt really loud at the end, obviously, but there was a big pocket of blue sort of quite right opposite us.
It was a record crowd, 6,743, but obviously it wasn't a full stadium. What's your impression? What are your thoughts when it's a decent crowd, but when you put it in a big stadium, it sometimes negates the record crowd statistic?
The Conti Cup's a strange one. It's never really, you know, it's the same teams. You know, we've had FA Cup finals that have been Arsenal-Chelsea. We've had two Arsenal-Chelsea FA Cup finals at Wembley. And, you know, both times you've looked at 30,000, 40,000 fans. And with the Conti Cup, it's just never really happened. I mean, you know, the Saturday evenings, it's quite an accessible ground. You know, it's right in the city centre. It's quite middle of the country, so it's difficult. A lot of people say, do we need to wait until the semi-finals are over and then pick somewhere, because obviously it was two London teams, but there's a lot that, you know, I was at Sheffield United last year, obviously, when Bramall Lane hosted it, and there's a lot that goes into it. I don't think it's something you can do in 4 weeks, so I think it's this constant battle we've got with trying to get people interested and obviously fighting with the men's game when it comes to a Saturday afternoon as well.
Give us your takeaways from the game then. It ended in dramatic style, didn't it? But just take us through your thoughts on it.
Yeah, it was a strange one because probably Arsenal deserved to win. So when you analyse a game where the other team, you know, deserves to win, it's hard to analyse kind of what went wrong because it's easy to say, you know, Ann-Kathrin Berger was very, very good. She had a fantastic game and Arsenal just didn't finish their chances. And, you know, Emma Hayes was quite open that Chelsea were lucky. So it was a difficult one. You know, they started really well, did Chelsea, but Arsenal just came on really strong. And unfortunately, Miedemar and a few others had a bit of an off day. And Beth England at the minute, you know, is probably the best number nine, well, the best English number nine in the country anyway. So, and that showed.
You've actually done an article about her recently, Rich. Going back to the depths of where she started out, she's got a Sheffield United connection, which I know always delights you. What surprised you when you were looking into her past and you were doing that research? What were the things that stood out about her?
Not a huge amount surprised me, kind of knowing her like I do, and the fact that she's got Yorkshire roots and a Yorkshire background. You know, people up here, you probably know, knowing me, are quite determined and quite stubborn. So
I'm not saying anything, yeah.
To know that Beth kind of really fought her way to the top and, you know, didn't give up when Chelsea loaned her out, because I think it would have been easy to. And speaking to her, it's quite clear that her confidence was massively knocked by that, because at the time, Chelsea, when they loaned players out, they never really went back. Yeah. And Beth did. And obviously, you know, she's now, you know, the number one striker in a team where you've got Sam Kerr and you've got Frank Kirby and you've got Erin Cuthbert. And it's just a great story, you know, to see someone that's come up really through the system, you know, played for Donny Bells and is now arguably England's number one striker.
Phil Neville's called her world class. Is she world class yet for you? She certainly has that potential. Is she there yet?
She's in world class form, definitely. Whether she's a world class player yet, I think there's probably another level to go. I wouldn't say you'd put her quite there yet, you know, with the Miedemars, the Sam Kerrs, the Hegerbergs, etc. But I think she is now, she's on par with Ellen White, definitely, and she's on par with quite a few others. And I think if she carries on, you know, yeah, she's going to be one of the top strikers in the world.
A word on Arsenal. Leah Williamson afterwards said that she felt there was nothing more they could have done in that final. If they went back over it again, they wouldn't change a single thing. Was that how you perceived the match and the performance from them?
She's probably right. I mean, you know, considering they got thumped 4-1 by them not long before. I think the fact that they came out, they pretty much dominated the game, and they dominated it to such an extent that even, you know, Emma Hayes admitted that they dominated it. So it's difficult. You know, I suppose you come out of a cup final and think you've done everything you can, then maybe it's easier to take. I'm not sure, but, you know, they did. And apart from put the ball in the back of the net, you know, they were quite wasteful. Well, Berger made some very good saves, but they also had some very good chances and got into some very good positions. And yeah, it's just one of those things, you know, people said before the game, it's a cup final, you know, anything can happen, and form goes out the window, and Chelsea were the team in form, and they probably should have lost the game, and that's just how it goes, unfortunately, for Arsenal.
Before you go, Rich, a word on the Championship season being extended. Bad weather recently, those postponements mean that the last fixtures of the season will now be played on the 10th of May. How's that been received at club level, obviously with your sort of media hat on, media Sheffield United hat on?
I think it's quite a relief that it's been sorted sort of early doors, so we can now obviously prepare for the end of the season. It's not ideal in terms of there's now a big gap sort of between the last game before that and then the final day of the season. But, you know, obviously if there are any other more postponements, which obviously we had on Sunday, you know, we now have sort of a slightly larger gap to get those games in. It's not ideal in terms of, I don't know whether players have already booked holidays or things like that, but I'm not privy to that kind of information. But I'm sure you know, the players are professional. If they have to be here and have to play for another few weeks, you know, especially if we're in a promotion chase, then you know, they'll do it. So I think we're just glad it's been sort of kind of done and dusted early on, really, and we can now prepare for the end of the season.
This is the Offside Rule WSL edition from Muddy Knees Media.
You're listening to the Offside Rule WSL edition with Football Manager. So news from elsewhere in women's football this week. It took 3 weeks, but we finally finished the fifth round of the FA Cup. Did anyone think it would happen? Brighton were the final team to put their place in the last eight. That was thanks to a 3-0 victory over Championship side Crystal Palace. A reminder of how the quarter-final draw looks as a result. Brighton against Birmingham, Everton host Chelsea, Arsenal take on Tottenham Hotspur in a North London derby, and Leicester, who are the only remaining Championship side, take on Manchester City.
I really like these ties. Very quickly, who are we going to see in the semis out of these teams, Anne-Marie?
I'm thinking we're going to end up with WSL teams, so
are we essentially going to see Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City in the semi-final?
Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
I'd say so.
Yeah, I think so.
Plus, who else?
I think Birmingham will have too much for Brighton. Brighton have improved quite a lot under Hope Powell, but I think that Birmingham have just got that experience in the Cups.
Interesting. I keep using that word a lot because I think this is a really interesting time. I'm going to go against you this time, okay, Lindsay. I'm going to go with Brighton, I think.
Is that just because Birmingham are in a bit of disarray? Yeah. They've had so many changes, young players. But I think those young players are starting to find their feet.
We'll see how that pans out. Next up, the Great British Weather did its best. But the good news is we do have now a new date for that Merseyside derby. It's the rescheduled clash, of course, because it was postponed due to Storm Kira, was it? Or was it Storm Dennis? Or was
Kira.
Storm Jorge, or was it who? I mean, of all the storms. Anyway, it's going to take place Wednesday, 25th of March, under the lights, 7 o'clock at Goodison Park.
Transfer news. Manchester City can confirm that striker Pauline Bremer is going to leave the club at the end of her current campaign. Not only have they revealed that, they've revealed which club she's going to.
She's going to Wolfsburg. This is a good one to look at, actually, because Pauline Bremer was injured for the first bit of her career at Manchester City. Started this season, of course, the side without Ellen White, and we saw the best of her, and she's had a great season with City. So why is she moving? Well, she's moving to Wolfsburg, who are a force in women's football over in Germany, and, you know, they are a top side, but she's leaving a very exciting team like Manchester City. Is she doing it because she doesn't know who her manager is going to be next season?
So reality check, because this is what I take away from this. She said that she wanted a new challenge in her career. We've seen Nikita Paris go to Lyon. We've seen other players leave the WSL to go to either France or Germany. Are we kidding ourselves that the WSL is right up there at the moment? Because I believe the quality on show, it's one of the best leagues, if not the best league in the world right now in women's football. But all of these players want to go to other clubs. And this is another one that we're losing for a new challenge. What are we reading in between the lines? That she's actually going to go after Champions League football with Wolfsburg instead?
I think that's the case. I when I saw the news this week, I did raise my eyebrows a bit because exactly what Kate said, she's had a fantastic time at at City.
We're talking 24 goals in 43 appearances.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. I'm wondering if there's something a bit more going on here than what we
I think it's a return back home. She is a German international. She's going to be playing with the likes of Dominique Bloodworth, Alma Schutt, Alexandra Popp. I think this is a going back home for a bit type move. Mm. I have to question whether there is a bit of, well, we don't know who's going to be our boss next season. She's fighting for her place at Manchester City, which is what, of course, players in the top sides are doing now in the WSL, completely reasonable. But is there an element of, I don't know what's ahead for me next season in the WSL and I just want to play consistently, especially as she's come back from that long injury?
I would argue that she'd already fought for her place, though. I think she'd already got it. That shirt was hers. It's going to be a big loss. And I'm just disappointed to see another big name leaving the league. And I'm hoping that we're not that feeder club situation where people are going to Manchester City, Arsenal, Chelsea, which are top clubs and should be up there fighting for Champions League titles, to go to other teams, because otherwise you're always going to be playing catch up with the likes of
And by the way, I can't remember the last time Wolfsburg won the Champions League. I think it's like 2013.
They've been in the final a few times.
Yeah, but they, I mean, yes, they have won the title the last 3 years. They've won the last domestic cup. The Porkal, is it called? The DFB Porkal? Whatever it's called. They've won the German Cup in women's football for the last 3 seasons too. So, you know, of course, she's going to get a bit of glory there as well.
International football next. So straight after the Conti Cup final, some of the Chelsea and Arsenal players, they didn't have much downtime or celebration time, if you're a Chelsea player. They went straight to Gatwick, ready to jump on a flight with England teammates. Can you imagine what that was like for the Arsenal players and the Chelsea players? They've just played in a final together. One's lost, one's won, getting on the plane together. They went to Orlando, the Lionesses facing the USA in the She Believes Cup opener on Thursday. Now, this is a title they're defending. Are they in good shape to do so?
Oh, man, I've got mixed feelings about this one. I really have. For a long time, I'd been saying, when are we going to see some youngsters come into the England squad? Because I think that transition needs to start happening fairly soon. And Phil Neville, to his credit, had brought in young players in terms of the training ground and invitational, things like that. And now we've seen some fantastic names joining the squad. At the same time, I'm thinking, they're going there to defend their crown. They're going up against the World Cup champions. I'm not entirely sure that squad, when I look at it, even though it's got tons of experience mixed with some youngers, as the young people say, in there, I'm not sure they're strong enough to take on the
USA. How would you make it better? Who would you put in there? If you want experience, if you're leaning towards that, would you then parachute in a Farrah Williams?
Yeah, I would. I would parachute her in. I think Beth Mead is a big loss.
Yeah.
Lucy Bronze is a big loss.
And they were the two, I think, they're the big losses.
But arguably,
for me,
he can't do anything about those.
No, and I totally appreciate that. Look, I mean, obviously, I want England to win. I want them to defend their crown. I'm going to be a bit risk adverse and just temper down my expectation that they're going to be able to beat USA. Let's get a draw, at least.
Lucy being out for it, I do think scuppers things slightly. And I'm going to explain why I think that. Rachel Daly, who is such a versatile player. We've seen her for the Lionesses playing all sorts of positions.
Guess who's going to get parachuted into right back?
Exactly. But I actually think Rachel Daly would have fed off, and well, certainly Beth England would have fed off Rachel Daly very well. That is the partnership that I thought could have been electric. And now if Rachel Daly moves back into more of that right back role to fill where Lucy was, unless, of course, you know, we can't take anything away from the fact that Alessia Russo, I know she's only 21, but she's been called in to replace Lucy. So maybe she will slot straight in and Rachel Daly will be more advanced.
I don't think she's a direct replacement for Lucy. She was out there, Alessia, for the kind of experience. She was training with the side. She plays over in America anyway. So for her, it was about experience and she's good enough to be part of the squad. Is she a direct replacement for Lucy? No, I don't think she is. I have to be honest about that, unless Phil Neville is wanting to spring a surprise on the likes of USA. We'll see Japan and Spain also out there as well, by presenting them with a new and unknown younger team.
I'm not worried about Spain and Japan. I'm more worried about USA, because they are on another level. And I do think Phil Neville's been very vocal about the fact that he, after the disappointment of the Women's World Cup, he's expecting a lot more.
But is he? Why would you select such a young side if it wasn't more looking ahead to the Euros next year?
Indeed. And I think he's done the right thing. But I agree with Lindsay that it's been slightly scuppered by the loss of Lucy Bronze and Beth Mead.
I also think the other thing that's going against England for this is the way the fixtures have fallen, you know, facing USA in the opener.
Yeah.
Because I think if USA, which they have the potential to do, do put a few goals past England, what does that do to confidence? And we've seen since the World Cup a real dip in form when it's been in these friendlies. Mm. I know that the She Believes Cup, there is silverware up for grabs and there's a title to defend. But I do think that it will really, really knock morale if the USA seem to be on a different level, which could happen. So how they shape up against them, I think, will determine how they do in the whole thing.
Well, despite those high-profile dropouts, there's a fair bit of buzz surrounding the tournament and what we're going to expect from Phil Neville's Lionesses. Here to discuss their chances, women's football journalist for the likes of 442 and many others. She's at the She Believes, covering it for the Mail. It's Claire Bloomfield. Hello.
Hello there, ladies.
Now,
hello.
Intel tells me that you've just finished at the breakfast buffet in Orlando, Claire. I'm expecting you to come back 10 sizes bigger than when you went, because I know what those American breakfasts are like.
Yeah.
Just nobody tell Dawn Scott how big the waffle was and what was on top of it. Because I'll be well and truly out of section.
Let's talk about England's chances. They're really going to have to hit the ground running, aren't they? Because not the way that you'd have planned it, USA up first for Phil Neville's Lionesses.
In a way, I actually think it's a good thing that there's, you know, they can't ease their way into this tournament. As you say, they have to hit the ground running. They have to make a statement and they really have to start rebuilding their reputation, I think, because, you know, the last six or seven games following that semi-final defeat to USA did not go to plan. So, they, you know, if they want to be the world's best and they want to surpass the likes of the USA, as Neville keeps reminding us, then they've got to make a statement and it's got to start on Friday.
Sandy McIver's been named as one of the goalkeepers for the England Lionesses. How surprising were you seeing her name on the list, Claire?
I'm not surprised because Neville always has made a point of bringing in young players with kind of the longer term future in mind. So he wants her to be part of this squad in and around an international competition. And he obviously feels that experience for her will be vital in bridging the gap between obviously the under 21s and the senior team. I'm not convinced she will play. I think it's very much kind of between Telford and Roebuck, but obviously Roebuck has picked up a knock of late. She's fit enough to be in the squad, but it'll be interesting to see what he goes with. Obviously, there's been a lot of questions around our goalkeeping situation for a long time, hasn't there? You know, you wonder if Karen Bardsley was fit, would she be here? Would she still be his first choice? So, yeah, I think it's great that Sandy is involved, and if it helps us kind of bridge that gap and keep competition for that number one jersey, then it can only be a good thing.
Japan and Spain are the other two countries in this competition. Much being made about Japan as potentially the surprise outfit for this, because they've been gearing up, haven't they, to the Olympics, and this is a bit of a warm-up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, an Olympics all being well, should it go ahead. An Olympics on home soil is absolutely vital that they make a real mark there, and you know they want to go in and win it the same way, you know, we'll have pressure on us as a home nation to win the Euros in 2021. So, you know, their preparation, obviously a very young squad that's been building up to this for the last 4 years, and this is a really good chance to test themselves against some of the best sides in the world. And it'll be interesting to see how England approach this one. Obviously, they thrashed them in the competition last time around, so that could be a really exciting tie.
They are a young side, Japan, definitely one to watch. Spain, still a bit of an unknown quantity. They've got some very good players there, some very technically good players, and they always, don't they, arrive with a game plan. We saw some good stuff from them during the World Cup. But I just wonder what pressure, if any, is on Phil Neville, Claire? Where are we realistically looking at that we should expect from the Lionesses?
Well, this is something I spoke about in the column that came out for 442 this week, was very much that, you know, all of those conversations around Phil Neville's P45 being all but signed have kind of died down over this 3 month break that we've had from the last international fixtures. But I think those conversations will quickly resurface if they really don't turn in not just good performances, but, you know, go on to win it. For me, that's what they have to do. You know, if they want to surpass the likes of USA and they want to be kind of named amongst them as the best sides in the world, then they need to be able to win tournaments back to back. And that's what USA have managed to do. They've got that kind of very strong mentality that England have lacked of late, particularly in big moments. So I think this will be a real test for Phil Neville, and the pressure's on.
For those unaware of how the She Believes Cup works, so you've got different host cities throughout America, different stadiums, and of course the crowd sizes that you're potentially expecting. Can you just talk us through that, Claire?
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's not great. Probably not for them either, because the travelling, you know, obviously the flights around the United States are, you know, 2 or 3, 4 hour flights in some instances. So the team will leave Orlando, they'll fly up to New Jersey, they'll play in Harrison in New Jersey, which is the home of the New York Red Bulls, and then they'll fly down to Frisco in Texas. So they're very long journeys, and I don't think we should underestimate the travel that those players will go through. It's interesting, actually, Demi Stokes spoke to me about this just a couple of weeks ago, as you know, when she was playing college football in Tampa as a youngster, she remembered even at that level, you know, she would fly every single weekend to games, even just at college level. So that, you know, the Americans are a little bit more used to traveling those sorts of distances than we are. So it'll be interesting to see how Dawn can help them recover and sort of what shape they'll be in, because there is only a few days between the first and second game.
A reminder of the fixtures then that are coming up. The 5th of March is the USA against England, 7 p.m. our time. 8th of March for the Japan versus England match, that's 6:15 p.m. UK time. And 11th of March for England versus Spain, 7:15 p.m. Music you just heard signals Any Other Business, found by Kate Borsay. Good find, that.
Well, it isn't a find, it's a classic.
It's you going through your old music collection.
I forgot how good that track really is. Tribe Called Quest.
Very, very good. The Finnish Women's League has removed its gender reference. I'm liking this story this week. So they've been renamed the National League rather than the Women's National League. And they're sponsored by Subway as well.
Delicious.
Another sponsor getting on board with women's football, which is nice to see.
Nice meaty sandwiches there. Tragic news, just moving on to our next item of Any Other Business. Former Charlton player Lucy Kerr.
This is really sad.
Lost her battle with cancer last week at the age of just 20. She joined the club in 2013-14, playing with the under-14s, where she won Player of the Year. She progressed into the club's under-16s and went on to captain Kent Schools before making the step up to play senior football with Charlton in the club's development team. Our thoughts to everyone at Charlton. And
I saw Carly Telford amongst many other players that tweeted about this. I mean, 20 years old, no age at all, and you just feel for the family, don't you? I mean, it's just tragic. Also, World Cup winner Sydney Leroux, she's called for more support for mothers in the NWSL.
She's my hero, by the way.
Is she?
She's my football crush. Just hands up, I think she is the most beautiful, awe-inspiring role model of a woman that I could ever come across.
But on that note, she gave birth to a daughter in June, returned to action for the club. This is why you like her, because it's reminiscent of you when you did a whole new degree when you were pregnant.
By the way, I liked her at Canada 2015 before she had children.
Okay. She returned to Orlando Pride 3 months after giving birth. How many weeks was it before you came back to Sky Sports when we worked together?
Oh, six.
Yeah, 6 weeks after giving birth.
Wow.
Yeah. It's because you...
I had to.
I hadn't got any money.
And actually, that is very
similar. Actually, that's very similar. Carry
to
on.
What Sydney Leroux is saying. So she's told Forbes that she spent more money on babysitters than she made from doing her job as a professional football player. This is, of course, the American League, where there is no, as far as I'm led to believe, no formal arrangements for maternity pay. It's a bit different if you play for the national side, for US soccer. There are arrangements in place there. But she said far too often we see women having to make a choice between motherhood and their career.
And that could be another huge debate, I think, that ends up happening in this country as well. We must mention Manchester City's free footballs for girls.
This is amazing,
actual
by
free
the way.
Footballs.
Yeah, go on to our Twitter account, because we're supporting Manchester City on this one. It's their Same Goals campaign. So hashtag Same Goals. For every single video they get of a girl saving or scoring a goal, each video, each participant, a free limited edition Puma football. So if you have a daughter or a niece or know of young girls who like to get involved in football, video them, send it through to us via the Offside Rule pod. We've quote tweeted Manchester City's campaign tweet. Every single entrant gets a free football. And if you do it through us, you'll also get a chance to win
a signed Steph Horton shirt.
Nice.
So you can win that as long as you just tag us in as well at Offside Rule Pod when you're sending your videos through. That will enter you automatically. So just make sure you do that. Well, that's your lot for this week. I'm afraid we've run out of time. A big thank you to our sponsor, Football Manager. We're going to be back next week to reflect on the first round of clashes in that She Believes Cup out in the USA, plus all the other news in the world of women's football.
If you miss us during the week, and why wouldn't you? You can head over to our website, Offside Rule Pod. thepodcast.com for all our latest shows and articles covering both the women's and the men's game. That includes Martin Whiteley's Women's Worldwide Roundup, a fresh one of those this week for you, and more on that cracking Conti Cup final.
I'm going to get my fork at the ready. Anne-Marie, thank you for coming in, especially thank you for bringing in cake.
You're welcome.
I am salivating at the prospect of the ganache that's going to greet us in just a few minutes' time.
What has a post-birthday week got in store for you?
Oh, today, well, obviously spending time with you guys. I'm over to Ipswich tomorrow for the FA Cup for that one. And then taking part in some events for International Women's Day this weekend.
Lovely. Of course, that's come around. It's always March,
isn't it? So quickly.
So loads in store for you, Anne-Marie. Thank you to our listeners for getting involved as well. A special word to some of you who've been reviewing the show. These are really nice. Thank you so much. Patrick West says, incredible work covering the women's game, which doesn't get the attention it deserves. Have never missed an episode. He says the WSL coverage we all need. Thank you very much, Patrick.
Yes, and thank you as well to Daniel Bartolini, cream of the crop for English and European women's football. A wonderful show with great production value, deep, knowledgeable journalists reporting on the WSL, including news regarding European leagues. It emerged from the glory of the 2019 World Cup. It did that and has helped a stateside audience stay in touch with the world overseas.
Goodness me, we haven't paid you. Thank you
so much
for
that. Please give us more. 5 stars very and a humbly. Review wherever you get your podcast.
That's it for us this week, Lindsay. We're off to delve into Anne-Marie's birthday cake. We'll see you next week, listeners.
You've been listening to The Offside Rule WSL Edition, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, please email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And for more from The Offside Rule, head to our website, offsiderulepodcast.com.
Muddy Knees Media.